Yeah, episode 8.
All right. Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Provisional Nerf News Network podcast. I'm KT of Family Foam Sport. I'm here with all of the co-hosts, JoltKing627, VileMods, and Grimm's Nerfworks. Everybody say hello.
Hello. Hi.
Great to be back. I have had a really exhausting weekend. I was down at Maryland Mayhem. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Oddly enough, we are recording in the middle of the day on Thursday, April 20th. Normally we record at night, and so everybody is in kind of a different... Weirdly, I think people are more tired right now than normal.
I'm a nocturnal being. I'm not used to this.
I'm also not a morning person.
Well, considering that at least for... It's 1:20 in the afternoon here, so... I think we'll figure it out. I think we'll be able to get through.
We'll do it. We'll do it live. We'll figure it out.
I wake up late. Don't judge me.
Yeah.
I won't judge you too hard. There is a lot of news this week, but we kind of trimmed down the topics that we're going to actually discuss on the podcast. And of course, In mid-podcast, we will be playing Name That Blaster, and this is the first week that Grimms will be picking the blaster, so I'm really excited to see what you came up with.
I put a lot of thought into which one I chose this week and whatnot, so this should be fun.
I'm terrified.
We will. We have a bunch of new product stuff to talk about from a lot of the major brands, tie-in things, and skinned blasters. We have a new magazine from Out of Darts. We'll also be talking about a bunch of new hobby stuff, the Flux Labs Noba, the coat hanger, and some event things. We're going to talk about the newly announced Dart Zone Blaster Bash, as well as I'll share a little bit about my experience in Maryland Mayhem. So without further ado, let's jump right in on the Fortnite M4, which is sort of a dear topic to my heart. It kind of jumped out at me when I saw it because I just did a video on my channel about the Fortnite LP, which is one of the two pistols that comes with the what is that kit called? It's the Flint Knock is the other one, the dual pack.
Yeah, the dual pistols pack or something.
Yeah, and I just did a video about how the profile on that is so much more firearmy than most of the other Fortnite blasters. Which I think already... Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Fortnite blasters already lean a little more firearmy, I'd say, than the average Nerf blaster, but they have tended to pick the less realistic weapons from Fortnite to build their products off of. Like the Burst AR is a giant rectangle and has these like weird angles coming off of it.
Well, it's more like they are based off real firearms, but what they really did is they cartoonified them so much that they look fine.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And that's what they did not do here.
Plus, I think the choices were interesting for them previously because they were, I don't know, it's like you don't see people sitting around with AUGs all the time out in public or stuff like that. Like, if you were to look at, like, what popular firearms are, for example, the Burst AR is based on the AUG and the Assault Rifle is based on the SCAR, but both of those are relatively firearms that you don't see as much in the public train of thought. Like, you could tell a random person in the general public to pick out an AR-15 out of a list of guns, or like an AK-47, but they're less likely to recognize something like an AUG or like a SCAR or like other more obscure firearms.
It's not a hot topic item.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so when they're more cartoonified, they're less likely to be recognizable.
Agreed. And so what I can't figure out is, to get two of these back-to-back, to get this one that looks so distinctly like a pistol and is in a dark color, speaking of the LP, and then to get this new M4, which the profile on it is just so... I'm trying to figure out what could be going on at Hasbro that has caused a shift that has allowed them to suddenly want to make...
Foam blasting edgelords like prophesized this blaster's coming.
You know, I'm curious, to be honest, because they have a deal with Fortnite. And I think what we're seeing, unfortunately, is that they are running out of these sort of cartoonish ones as their lineup. And maybe, because even when I played Fortnite years ago, you know, like that M4 style and some of these other ones, the blasters or the guns that were in the game were very cartoony. And looking at some of the newer models, I'm kind of surprised because they aren't as cartoonish as they used to be.
Yeah. So I'm actually relatively up to date with what's in Fortnite since I regularly play the game. What's interesting to me is that gun model that we're seeing in this blaster, the assault rifle variant that looked like the M4 hasn't been in the game for a while now, actually, which is interesting. It's what you would consider a legacy item.
I was wondering about that. I looked somewhere where I went to get one of the images I used. It said that it's vaulted, and I figured that's what that meant.
There are, of course, a lot more models in the game that are now more realistic, unfortunately. It's just kind of the direction the game's gone in, but there are also plenty of newer weapons that are just as cartoony or less recognizable that they could have picked from. Like, there's, like, random energy rifles and, like, cobbled-together rifles and other stuff like that that have been added into the game. And also, I feel like the assault weapon category in general just wasn't the best thing to be picking from for new items, I guess.
Yeah.
They could have, like, made another shotgun or something else that would have been more likely to be more friendly model.
I think the energy weapons would have been cool, personally. Energy weapons would have been neat.
Yeah, like there's just looking at stuff on the assault rifle category, there was a sideways minigun, this weird sideways rifle, a burst pulse rifle, a Stark Industries energy rifle, and then there's a Chitauri energy rifle.
I know that the like Marvel tie-in stuff is not like, you know, that's double dipping on lines that I'm sure.
Yeah, that would be double dipping. They wouldn't be able to do. Have the Marvel trade license. It just would have been more expensive.
I know. They'd have to double pay the licenses. But it just sounds like there's so many more interesting options available. Yeah. And that's historically what they've done. And I don't understand why they've stopped.
And here's another thing. It's not that they can't make it cartoony. Because, like, even Busby actually has done a replica, kind of this same weapon. From the Walking Dead series. And it looks better than the Nerf one in terms of realism. They got away with it. Because it looks slightly more cartoony and it's slightly brighter.
It does. Well, and of course, Busby's license for The Walking Dead is for the comic books, not for not for the show, which may have something to do with it. Well, I am hopeful that Nerf will turn this around and kind of go back to what they were doing before. But I have to admit, I'm not seeing... You know, I made my video, and I'm getting a lot of comments from gun enthusiasts who seem to assume that I'm advocating for gun control with that video. I do not understand the comments that I'm getting on this at all.
I'm going to say this right here, right now. As somebody who has played Park Wars and has even had to deal with our club having police called on us and our privileges of being able to play at that park being revoked because of a person in public who called on it, I am not here advocating for gun control. We are trying to show the issues of what it means to have these in places, like public places. It's the general populace, the general public. There are people who are going to be nervous, and you have to understand that those people are the ones that we are looking out for, because we don't know when they're going to pop up. We don't know when they're going to be trying to call law enforcement upon children playing a game, you know, with toys that have a realistic profile.
Yep.
And you don't know that. And I hate when
I remember last time I was up at a local club, we got the cops called on us and they showed up with their gear and whatnot. And they're like, just so you know, we have like all these people back here and these extra officers and whatnot. We're checking this out and whatnot. And it was over someone, I think it was specifically someone called a report over someone's Nexus Pro.
Yeah.
That was like spray painted like a vibrant metallic purple or whatever. And everyone else had stuff that was a lot more less likely to get called on. It was the Nexus Pro that it got us in hot water.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a real thing. And you know, one of the comments that was left on my video was like, the problem is random people. It's not the toys. It's like, yeah, but are you going to outlaw people looking at toys from across the street?
Yeah.
Like what? Like you can't change the perception of an average person without doing communication work, which is
that,
what I'm trying to do and what we're trying to do.
And that person is the first line of defense. That is why they're doing it, because they're trying to make sure everybody is safe. You can't really fault them for that.
Not only that, but it's also putting the means to a 13-year-old making their toy gun. It's only a matter of time before some Call of Duty obsessed 12-year-old gets his black rattle can out and spray paints one of those black because mommy got it for him for Christmas.
And we've seen that numerous times.
Yep. And to be fair, they could do that to any blaster, but like, it's certainly not made better when it's shaped like this.
If you really want to talk about this, talk about Australia and the reason why things like airsoft or gel ball is more controlled than firearms is because those were being purchased to hold up convenience stores and commit crimes.
Right.
It's the same thing. The more realistic you make the blasters, the easier it is for them to use somebody to use it the wrong way. And then it just is bad for everyone. It's not just bad for the person who used it. It's bad for the people who play with them in parks and kids. It's bad for even if you are pro gun, it's even bad for you. Like it turns bad for everyone. So if you don't understand the bigger picture, you really need to step back and look at it.
Absolutely. 100%. Speaking of offensive paint jobs, there's a Nerf is continuing with its hardcore licensing work as well. And we got a leaked shot of a Nerf Elite 2.0 Warden, which is a blaster that already has a little bit of history, I'd say, in the hobby.
They did fix Hasbro's credit.
As far as I know, all the newly produced Wardens don't have the manufacturing problems that the original Wardens had, and don't seem to have the same kind of breakage rate. I think the nail is already sort of in the coffin on that one to some degree as far as like hobbyists are concerned, but it's good to know that kids who are still getting them as presents or whatever are not going to find them breaking really quickly. However, there is now a version of the Warden coming out which has artwork related to Transformers Rise of the Beasts. Is that what it's called? Printed on the side of the blaster in a style very similar to the X-Shot skins line, where it's a full panel print. And it's just like, it looks like, I don't think it's not actually a scene from the movie, but it looks like it could be just like a scene from the movie where there's just like all kinds of stuff going on. And there's like a couple of the characters. And so like there's that gorilla looking character.
Yeah, that's Optimus Prime on it in the film.
And Optimus, yeah. Oh, okay. Okay.
It's based on the Beast Wars TV show.
Beast Wars,
at
right.
the time.
So who wants one? And more importantly,
Diesel.
More importantly, could this be a response to the X-Shot skins line? Like, I don't feel like Nerf is in a position where they would feel like they have to respond to something like X-Shot doing.
I mean, we've already, I feel like their take on responding to X-Shot and stuff like that was the Alpha Strike line. I don't feel like they're probably responding to X-Shot per se because of how the timeline on all these stuff is done.
Hasbro
really likes its promotional products and stuff for like tie-ins with movies and other things like that. And we've already seen them do this. We've seen them do this before already with the barricades, the Transformer barricades that had the screen printing on them. And I actually think it's really cool to see something like this again, because I know people really liked the screen printed like designs on them from like the Transformer stuff and whatnot.
It's a shame it's on a Warden, because there are so many other blasters in the lineup they could have chosen that I think probably would have looked better, even just look wise. I think the Warden is pretty, I mean, you know, it's just a rough cut, but I think there were so many other blasters they could have put that print on, and it would have been a huge win for them, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, the proportions on the Warden compared to the proportions of the rough cut, it just is, like, even if you set aside all of its history, it just is not
it's
a
ugly.
Very good-looking blaster compared to even its cousins.
Its face looks smashed.
Totally. Yeah, that's a good description. That's a good description.
I'd go with that.
The Pug Warden, got it.
The Pug Warden. we have bred our wardens for generations to look this way, and now they can't breathe correctly. Continuing Dragon. With the painted blaster discussion, one of the new X-Shot, well, not a new X-Shot leak, but we are getting new developments in it. And we've heard about, my chair just collapsed. Hold on. Okay, I'm good. We've heard about this blaster before, and as we get more and more details for it, it gets kind of weirder and weirder. X-Shot is coming out with the, currently just, it's just called the Lock Blaster. And it appears to be a lever action revolver that has a 3-digit combination lock. And in order to get your combo, you have to scan a QR code.
I hate this with a burning passion.
I have so many questions about what's going on here.
I will say I'm curious what they're going to do with that, because with the QR code, And I know Jolts mentioned it too, about how, you know, what are, you know, is it going to be on a card? Are everybody going to lose it? And then nobody can unlock their blaster because they forgot what their combo was. Like, how are you going to have the ability to do it? Unless there's like a QR code actually on the blaster as well. But
everybody's going to do exactly what every secretary at any office does. And when they're given the password, they're going to write it on the blaster in Sharpie.
Carve it into the side of the blaster. It'll be fine.
Also,
yeah,
like,
I don't know.
Let's be honest here. QR code is probably the worst possible way to give you your code. Because let's see here. What do you need for a QR code? A smart device. Not everyone has one of those.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. And it is a budget blaster, technically. And seeing that a budget blaster was going to have something like that, I mean, you know, your parent, like the parents of the kids might have that, but maybe the kids don't. You know, and that's,
mommy, I locked my blaster. Yeah. Can you unlock it?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, personally, I'm interested. Obviously, I don't mind. I think it's cool. I think it's a nice, cool looking design, the blaster with the leaked images we got. But, you know, there are some things, and some people brought it up as well. I think it was Ab Quintic. I don't remember who it was that brought it up in the chat of, I wonder if removing the lock from the blaster would stop its functionality. Like, I hope it's not integral to it. Like, it's just a you know, something that puts something in the way. So,
well, here's another question. Thinking about the manufacturing logistics, as we know, the Codebreaker crossbow back in 2015 had a 3-digit code on it, but in actuality, I did a April Fool's video about this last year. Where I pretended to be the lockpicking lawyer, and covered the fact that in fact all Codebreaker crossbows have the same code, which is simply setting the center digit to 0. And there's obvious manufacturing reasons for that, right? It's much easier to just make them all the same. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost surprised that it wasn't like they were all set to be like 555 or something. So that they did all the numbers actually had to be in a particular place, but I guess that would have made the mechanism more complicated. Are they truly going to go with a manufacturing process that requires every single one to have a randomized code, which is then matched to a database, which would have to be serialized somehow? How much is this blaster again? Like, I feel like the backend requirements, even for just, I mean, I guess QR codes can store text, so maybe the QR code literally just stores the text and it doesn't have to connect to the internet in order to read the code.
I have no idea. And I don't think we had a price on it. Did we? Did it show?
I just remember seeing like a photo of it on like a designer's desktop and it being like this big looking blaster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I have a lot of questions about the manufacturing process. I don't know if they're actually going to give us a wide variety of different codes. I could see them doing something where there's like 20 codes and they're randomly placed on the blasters. And then you, cause you get into the same kind of questions, things that you get into when you're manufacturing like blind bag toys and stuff where they have to be like randomized. I it's hard to imagine that they're going to do all of that with a product like this, but then you get to the other question, which is this their first lever action?
Yes.
Yes.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be a first for lever actions.
So, lots of questions come up with lever actions. You know, we had the like Adopt Me Bees had a, like, even though there was a metal sheet in there, it was a relatively flimsy lever action compared to like the Sling Fire.
Even the Sling Fire is pretty flimsy. It's built the same way.
Yeah.
As is the Scavenger.
And there's a lot of, so there's a lot of things that are difficult about building a good lever action is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Now it's interesting. It's not necessarily going to be as flimsy as we think because it may be a budget toy line, but if you'll remember, Busby has done several lever actions. The Sentinel, the Rapid Fire Tech, and even a weird water blaster? They all had solid metal levers.
Yeah. Solid.
Right. Well, I would love for it to be good. So fingers crossed that we get a good lever action out of X-Shot.
Really hope I get one. Really hope. I really
You would definitely have fun with something like this. I would love to see what you would do with this.
I know these are just
going to show up at Goodwill because people will think they're broken when they forget the combination, just like the Codebreaker crossbow.
That is true. Yeah. You are totally right.
Yeah,
totally
and I, right. That's where I was hoping. I was like, I really hope I start seeing him at the Goodwill very soon.
You probably will.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, moving on out of the major brand discussions, we have a new Talon-compatible magazine on the market. Out of Darts and Eli Wu have released the Coda Mag. And it, you know, as we said in the story, it is, what's the material that it's made out of? It's like
a glass fiber nylon or something like that, if I remember.
It's supposed to be tough as a tank.
Yeah, it's 33% glass fiber nylon.
I was going to say, if it's glass fiber nylon, that's very similar to like power tools. Yeah, a lot of those are also glass fiber reinforced nylon in a lot of cases. And that they're impact resistant. They have very good wear characteristics. And, you know, nylon is a very it absorbs moisture very well, which actually leads into one of the big perks of it, to be honest, which is the dyeing.
Right. And we've already seen at least one person dyeing one of these.
Yeah, Zoomed Out to Hova is I remember they were test dyeing them for, I think it was
Nismo.
What's their name? Yeah, Nismo. And yeah, it looked like green. It had great results.
Yep.
I did note, or they did note that something about it with the base color, it makes stuff a little darker, I think is what they were talking about with when dyeing the mags. So you're probably not going to get super bright, vibrant colors, but rather more like darker, saturated colors.
Yeah, you have to start with a light color.
Yeah, you could possibly also just go for like a gentler, like a pastel-y, I bet you could get something like that if you just do less layers and going for something more subtle. But
Okay.
Actually, if you ever want to see somebody who dyes a lot of nylon parts, if you ever see Roboman does, because Roboman has that that SLS printer that prints in nylon and dyes a lot of parts. So if you ever want to talk to somebody, Roboman would probably be a person that might give you a bit of insight on that.
So here's knowing what we know about the mag so far, and I haven't gotten to play one. I had like one. I shouldn't say who, but I had one person talk to me about using them who said that they were having some breakage problems with them. But that is a single person. That doesn't mean anything necessarily. If they are out and available as promised, do these have the potential to become? Because right now it's kind of like if you need mags and you're not building something specific, you kind of just order Talons.
Pretty much.
Do you think that these have the potential to become a standard, if not the standard?
I'm going to say no. Definitively,
why
no.
Not?
And there's one very important reason why. $20 a mag versus $9 Talon. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a premium mag, and you get what you pay for. It's great quality, but for people starting out, they're still probably going to buy Talons, unless they're really, really, really serious, or have the budget.
I think it's a competitive one, to be honest. That's where the market is probably
Like the market for this magazine is for competitive, because I remember there's a local guy who had Tachis, for example, and their bumper, or the bottom of the magazine, broken shipping, and already they had to have a 3D printed replacement sent out by Out of Darts and whatnot. Mm. And then in competitive play, the feed lip snapped and shattered or whatever, because it like took a tumble from not even that high of a height, because the Tachis are a lot more prone to breakage from my understanding. Yeah. So
I've seen one split in half.
Yeah, they're, because I have both
they almost seem more fragile than Talons.
Interesting. I mean, like, I have Tachis and I love them a lot, but I don't play that hard or that often, so like I'm not the person that's going to break them. But I also hand them to kids all the time, and I had one break, but I was able to fix it. But the rest of them are fine. But I also have like aftermarket extensions on them and stuff.
Yeah,
so. I can also see like this, yes, being like useful for people who beat the crap out of their magazines, which isn't everyone.
Yeah.
But if you do and you go through Talons and they're just breaking left and right, these could be useful to you.
It is very freeing to have a magazine that you're less afraid to toss out of the way or mag flip or mag flick out of your blaster or just
dump. Like, I can see this being useful for the type of person who like has a kind of speed style of play and they might like just ditch their mags on the ground as they're running or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about it being the competitive, because if you look at Eli Wu, I played with Eli down in San Diego. That is a very competitive scene down there, and when you look at how they play, when you see like a lot of the super fast competitive, we've seen people, you know, accidentally trip and knee their blasters in half and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah,
you know which one I'm talking about.
But, yeah, I know.
You know, so the Tachis are a little bit too long and difficult to maneuver when you're trying to be tucked in or trying to have that competitive play. And what I have a feeling is that this is an in-between of a Talon and a Tachi. It gives good mag, like, you know, capacity while not being in the way, and is now built for a little bit more aggressive play styles where, you know, if you step on it, if you just drop the mag on the ground and kick it, if you fall, you're not going to snap the mag in half or something crazy like that, because they should be able to withstand a lot more abuse. And I think it's more, that's what I'm saying, is it is definitely designed around that kind of play style is what I'm really seeing it work. And you're going to pay the cost, obviously. That's that glass fiber is not necessarily a cheap material, you know, when you start beefing up your parts like that. So, but it kind of has that flair as well to being able to dye it and stuff. So it's either going to be for people wanting to put some flair on their blasters, wanting a little bit of extra mag capacity, you know, cap compared to a Talon, or super aggressive playstyle, and they've unfortunately have a tendency to smash their mags. I think that's where its niche is right there.
I feel like amongst the casual hobbyists, what you might end up seeing is like similar to, I remember back in the HVZ scene, something you might see people do is like some people would like, for example, start out with their high capacity drum mag and they'd drop it on the field and then they'd swap to their smaller mags and whatnot. So you might start seeing people like have a single coda as like their first mag or something, and then swapping off to like other mags for people who not necessarily can afford to have an entirely coda loadout.
That's what I do with the Tachi, is I always carry one Tachi in the blaster and then I myself will probably at least
buy one coda and then have like a single coda on me or whatever. Because my scabbard rig, which I use for carrying all my other Talons, definitely wouldn't be able to fit a coda anyways.
That's the other thing. If you switch to a new magazine, now you need new gear to hold your magazines potentially if they don't. Yeah. It doesn't seem like the bottom of the coda is going to fit.
Because the scabbard rig
Talon
was designed
holders.
Specifically around being holding the 15 round Talon, or with bumpers is like the upper echelons of what it can hold.
Right.
So,
well, I'm excited to see them start to appear in games and see how they compare to the stuff that we already have on the market. I think there's definitely a lot of potential there. Moving on forward, it's time for us to play Name That Blaster, which is this game we love to play, which one of the members of our team picks a blaster off of, generally off the wiki, and reads the description of the blaster with some modification to obscure details, and the rest of the team has to guess what the blaster is. If we guess immediately, we get everybody that's guessing gets 4 points. If we cannot figure it out, we're allowed to ask 3 lifelines, and for each lifeline that is answered, we lose 1 potential point. The lifelines are the original release year of the blaster, the initial stock capacity of the blaster, and the original retail price. And this week, for the first time, Grim is the one who is going to be picking and reading off a blaster. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I can read off the description whenever you guys are ready.
I think I'm ready.
Hit us with it.
Put a tap on the competition with the blaster. The compact, one-handed design of this blaster lets you load fast with one hand and fire with the other. And when you cock your blaster and pull the trigger, the blasting is automatic. Your foes won't stand a chance when you hit the battlefield with your blaster.
Okay. Hmm. So that language of when you pull the trigger, the blasting is automatic feels like we've been misled by this kind of text before, but this one feels very specifically full auto.
I would disagree because it mentions cocking.
Yeah, it does mention cocking in that.
You're right.
Which I was wondering if it is going to be like a speed load jolt? Do you think it's something like in the Dart tagline?
It was saying something along the lines of one-handed operation. So I'm guessing hammer action.
I specifically noticed the word tap. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I can't think of what that would mean. The first sentence was specific, like specifically used the word tap, like went out of its way.
I know really what this one could be. I think this one we might need to use a lifeline, like maybe the capacity lifeline.
Can we hear it one more time?
Put a tap on the competition with the blaster. The compact one-handed design of this blaster lets you load fast with one hand and fire with the other. And when you cock your blaster and pull the trigger, the blasting is automatic. Your foes won't stand a chance when you hit the battlefield with your blaster.
It's hammer. It's definitely hammer action. So your hammer action is going to be obviously the hammer shot, the rebel for Vic.
This doesn't sound like rebel language. It also doesn't sound like zombie strike language.
Which is why I'm saying I think we need to take the capacity lifeline.
Does that sound good, Vile? Did we lose Vile?
We lost Vile.
Vile, no, come back. Vile went back to bed.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, hold.
That's our new title. Yeah, we can hold. Vile went back to bed.
Vile went back to bed. I'll put that on there too. I already have like three potential.
That's staying in.
You guys want to?
Okay. So we just had a lot of technical problems, but we're back.
Okay.
And
so I missed a few things. I don't know what y'all were talking about.
They were wanting
going,
to know if you guys want to hear the release year.
No. Give me 1 second. So it is a hammer action guaranteed. When you go into hammer action, you have the Rebel line. You have the Zombie Strike line. And you have the Doomlands line specifically that had...
Oh, Doomlands.
Yeah, Doomlands was another one. And Doomlands had about four different ones. There was like the Lawbringer, the Vanguard. I don't remember. There was like the four-shot one. You have the Rebel line had the four Vic and the Sweet Revenge. You had the... and then you also have in the... The only other ones would be the two shot from Zombie Strike, obviously, and the hammer shot, and then the two shot one that was in the stock, that modulus stock one in Jolt. Do you remember if there was any other ones?
Okay, so there was also obviously the Elite 2.0 Trailblazer, and there was also the Alpha Strike, whatever the fuck that thing is called.
There you go. So there was a few different hammer primed ones. So if you're going to do it. Capacity would help you trim down a lot of potential ones. Year is going to be difficult because all of those were
roughly
in the
same
year.
They're either very new or they're Rebel Zombie Strike era.
Right. That's why I was saying. And Modulus was around the same era.
I'm down to go for capacity. I'm down to go for capacity.
So have you guys agreed on capacity then? Is that your final answer?
Yes.
Stock capacity is 2.
Okay, so it's either going to be the double
so
strike, the modulus stock blaster, or the duet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the modulus stock blaster would have had, if it had its own language, it would have had language that indicated that it was a stock.
So it's either the double strike or the duet. And since there's no mention of any of the little glitz bits things, I'm going to say that
this
is the double strike.
There's also a modulus non-stock blaster that's basically the double strike, and I can't remember what it's called, but it's white, and it also has a hammer prime.
No.
You know what I'm talking about?
No, there's just the one from the Mediator stock. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
No, no. I promise you that this also exists. There's... what is it called?
There is a but it's a jolt, not a hammer action.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. No, it's a lot like the double strike, but it is slightly larger, and it's like a white, sleek, modulus kind of look.
Yes, that's the one from the Mediator stock.
Yeah, it actually I know the one you're talking, because that one goes into the stock, like Jolt's saying. I don't remember if they actually sold it separately from the stock. At least not that I remember.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll trust y'all. All right, fine, sure, okay, cool.
Again, I'm not sure. I don't remember if they did. That's my problem.
I mean, again, we've narrowed it down to a Zombie Strike blaster and a Rebel blaster, and none of this feels like Zombie Strike or Rebel language.
It's because...
But I think that the Zombie Strike is more likely.
I think so, too, because the Rebel version had those little bits on the side. It's the thing with all the pegboard holes, and you put the little Lego-looking things in it. There's no mention of that.
Oh, it was one of those.
So it's my guess is going to be the double strike.
Stock capacity 2. Yeah, there's only so many things that have a stock capacity of 2. I'm just trying to make sure that we haven't gone off the rails with the hammer prime.
It did say it was one hand operation and load with the other
hand. It did say it was one hand operation, but also the Maverick said that it was rapid fire. So, like, I feel like one handed operation is a very, could be a very mushy concept in that regard.
It did say hammer, though, as well, though, with the hammer action.
Did it?
If I remember correctly.
That's true. It did say hammer, and that could be why they use the word tap. I'm down to go with it.
Let's go with it.
I'm down to go with it. I don't know where else to go with it, though. That's fine with me. So we are saying
Zombie Strike.
The double strike.
Yeah.
So your final answer is the Zombie Strike double strike. Yes?
Yes.
Incorrect.
What?
Which one
is it? What is it?
Alright. The answer is
Give us the other two give us the other two lifelines. So if people guessing at home can have a chance at it.
The MSRP is $9.99, and the release year is 2015.
It's the double down,
that
isn't it?
Rebel Zombie Strike Error.
It's the double down.
Damn.
Oh!
The one-handed blasting is a red herring in the description.
Good one.
I see. You know what? I said that.
There was also no mention of hammer in their file.
Wait, wasn't there?
No.
Oh, no. That's what happened. It was right after the... that stupid
Is that
thing.
What happened when our audio glitch?
Right. Yeah.
Well, I've never had a double down.
I own a double down. They're pretty cool. All
right.
One hand operation. Well, you liars.
I looked at the description and I was like, oh,
that's
this will do. This will do just fine.
That was a really good one.
One hand operation. Awesome. Well done.
It also says it's automatic. So it's like, I was like, this has so many things that could mess them up. In 2015, there were so many things that released that year. It was like, I even made sure that there was something that had a similar stock capacity that released that year and whatnot.
Which
just
there's
a ton. Double barrel black. The double barrel.
Put a double
blasting
tap on the competition
automatic.
With the double down blaster. The compact one-handed design of this blaster lets you load fast with one hand and fire with the other.
Yeah.
And when you cock your blaster
saying,
and pull the trigger, the double barrel blasting is automatic.
Yeah, it's saying the double barrel because it automatically goes from one barrel to the other with the smart air restrictor.
Yeah. The reason, the other reason it also probably mentions one-handed design is that one of the things with it is it had a similar T-pole to the Fire Strike, so you could technically prime it with another blaster and whatnot and do stuff like that.
Amazing.
Yeah, see, even with the price range, that is right around the same price as the other ones, the hammer-primed ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I picked it very, very carefully.
You made a good choice. You made a good choice. That was extremely tough. Okay, well, no points for anybody. We have been thwarted, which definitely gives.
Learned how to play the game properly is what's happened.
Yeah.
I already have my next one picked, actually.
I have mine picked already.
The important thing is this gives Grim an opportunity to catch up since Grim started the game late.
True.
So everybody else has now essentially lost a turn. And that gives Grim an opportunity
to get those
numbers up. Okay. Moving on forward into more hobby-oriented stuff. I think this product is really, really cool. There are now available mostly fully built electronics kits for the Quick. Who wants to go over how this works? Because one of the things that
I actually,
you know, a lot of go ahead.
I was going to say ahead. I actually have the Kelly Industry kits for the Quick, I have the circuit boards. They're basically just switch plates, and so you know you could buy a hardware kit and obviously use the original files. Kelly made updated files to hold and house a circuit board that actually held your switches for you, so you have a larger, 21 amp switch, and then a smaller switch for the firing like mechanism. I think it's two other switches because it actually has it's basically a three switch setup, sort of like the Rapid Strike, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But this is taking all of that work out of it, so. What's really nice about it, and I would say this for anybody who doesn't have a lot of stuff. Obviously, people like me, KT, we've been using electronics and working on electronics for a while. So having, you know, wire strippers and soldering iron and you know, a whole bunch of stuff and getting used to that is not something difficult for us. But
we've talked about that before too, where you know, we were kind of in the chiptune modding scene around the time that they started to.
Mm-hmm.
Have more things available like this, where more of the product is pre-assembled and it just has less of a barrier to entry than having to like shave down your own LEDs to stuff them in the side of a backlight or whatever.
Yeah, and we did a lot of that. Like, so for us, this isn't a really hard thing to get. So for me, the kit, you know, on its own and soldering the board and cutting my own wires and all that, it's not a really big problem. But for a lot of newer people who may not have done that. Actually, you know, Maritime Foam talking about how having to learn how to do a lot of this and, you know, never really doing like soldering before. It's sometimes that barrier is a little bit difficult for people and they're worried or scared to kind of jump into it. It is nice to see something like this, again, like you're saying, a pre-built kit as opposed to just everybody knows and everybody just does it. It's already got the wire lengths figured out. It's got the battery connection. The only thing that you have to worry about is soldering to the motors themselves. And that's about it. And that's just because obviously they can't guarantee what motor combo or you know, what spacing your cage is and stuff like that. So
of
they
course.
Can't do that. But I do know that Kelly also offers motor spanning boards to kind of fit multiple sizes based on whether you're doing like day breaks or, you know, pulsers, worker, or even Flywheel the World size wheels. So you could even do that if you still feel like your skills aren't that good. You can then pick up one of those boards along with it, because I think actually in the selection you can do it. And it makes for a very straightforward, very simple. You could be very novice at your soldering and build yourself a Quick, actually. And I like seeing that. That is very nice. Again, accessibility, getting more cool blasters in the hands of people, and getting them on the field, like I was saying in the you know, the new segment, is it's just nice to see that. I like seeing that.
That's great too, and especially with a full auto blaster like this, like it kind of opens up things that, like, because that getting high speed full auto is one of these things that requires a pretty high skill level currently in order to achieve. Like, you either have to do, like, if you're doing a full auto strife, you have to do a lot. You have to replace pretty much all the innards of the blaster, or even if you're taking an existing full auto blaster, you're having to learn how to balance changing the rate of fire while simultaneously changing the power and making sure they both wind up where you want them. And
they're odd gearing systems. Like, you know, if you get into the Rapid Strike, people worry about the worm gear and you have to worry about
the Rapid Strike has a lot.
Can we just say for a moment, like, I have done a Rapid Strike. Wiring a three-switch Rapid Strike is a pain in the ass. trying to get the wires all in there, making sure all of them are going to the correct pieces. I never want to do that ever again. Yeah,
there's a lot. Challenging. It's challenging.
Yeah, there's a lot. So it is nice, again, to see something that can be, you know, 6, 9, 10, 12, 13, you know, some high rate of fire, you know, little handheld blaster like this, and kind of get it out there pretty quickly is really, really kind of cool to see.
I was describing this earlier. I was almost going to refer to it as a pre-show, but it's not really a pre-show so much as it's just us all slowly meeting up in the chat and whatnot and talking for a bit. Back in, like, when I joined the hobby, there was you used to be able to buy pre-soldered flywheel motor kits for Strifes and whatnot, which had the switches wired and it had the motors and everything else already done. And I remember I found out about them from Jangular, because Jangular's first Strife actually used one of these pre-soldered looms, because there were less motor options at the time and pretty much everyone was using 43.5. It was pretty easy to standardize them, and I think they had like Falcon 130s, and then like I think they were wired up for like Deans or something like that, if I remember right. And you used to get those, and it's kind of cool seeing a return of stuff like that, because there really hasn't been anything like these pre-made kits since like I joined the hobby. They were kind of there for a while, then they disappeared, and I haven't seen anyone bringing up that concept again until now.
Yeah, and I think it's really great for that to be coming back, just in terms of the accessibility of modding electronic blasters specifically, because you know, we have a lot of stuff like that for Springers, where obviously you have to figure a lot of stuff out, but everything is included and everything is based around just sort of a limited tool set that you have to have.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get more products like this for more blasters. Hopefully, I would love to see other designers take inspiration from this and do something similar. Moving on to another electronic blaster, we all know and love Dr. Flux, who's been a super fun and entertaining content creator, really great guy in the interactions that I've had with him, and has finally, I know that he's wanted to be building and making product for a while, actually manufacturing blasters, and his first entry into that seems to be here. The Flux Labs Nova is I have seen it and I've been like, oh, that is cool. That looks really cool. Does someone want to actually talk about what it actually is? Because as far as I understand, it's like a semi-auto flywheeler.
From what I understand, it is supposed to be a way of supporting the Flux Labs if you are a Flux Labs fan. And the basis was that it's highly customizable in the sense, since it uses Strife geometry, it opens up any number of cages you can put into it, and motor combos and wheel combos. But they're supposed to have fairly customizable side panels, in the sense of that colors could be done up in different ways and whatnot. From what I understand, they use a lot of different filaments on them, which allows for very interesting, unique color combinations. If they do offer stuff like made to order Novas, in the sense of they could do interesting things with the color combinations and whatnot. But what I know right now is that they're just doing the pre-made colors and whatnot. So it gives them stuff to work off of and whatnot, I guess.
Can I just say something?
Yes.
Sure.
It is the weirdest handle on that thing. I don't know anything about it, and maybe, like, for Ergo, it's actually really good, but for some reason, it is swept back so far, it just looks weird to me.
One of my friends has described, who's used them, is that you can fire it just fine, but if you're doing extended firing, the accuracy kind of goes out the window a little bit because of the grip angle, so it feels like it needs a stock, kind of, is what I had heard it described as, but it works, and it's comfortable.
It's just so odd.
I know one of my friends who does grip ergonomics as a thing, who studies a lot of that stuff. They were like, oh no, there's so many things I want to say about this grip and whatnot. They also didn't like that the mag release of all things is a pull, not a push. I remember hearing when someone was using a Nova at Flux Labs, they almost broke a Nova because they tried pushing hard on the mag release and not pulling on it. So it's like a reverse direction mag release. Weird. So you have to get your finger in between the magazine and the mag release to like
get. Do we know who actually has done the design work for this actually? Like
who helps out Flux Labs. It's interesting actually because I saw the very first, they had just finished printing off and actually getting the frame of the Nova made back in November when I was up at Flux Labs for the opening. So this has only been in development for about, it's been in development for under 6 months, because now we're at about the 6 month mark from when they first started. However, it's been mostly done from my understanding for a little while now.
Okay.
Hmm. It was literally just like a frame in the sense that like it had a semicircle front end that went into a square that then had a outline of a grip shape, and it had mounting holes for a cage, and that's all they had developed up to that point back in November when I saw it.
That's a relatively quick process.
Yeah, it's a fairly quick turnaround time on things, to be honest.
Interesting. Yeah, you can still kind of see that rounded front semicircle thing going on.
Yeah. Front of the poster. I could probably find a photo of something similar as to what it kind of was closer to looking like. I think they showed like the first official test. They like made a short about it or whatever, and everything's like zip tied together and whatnot. And it's just a frame.
Well, regardless, it almost. It's just exciting to see that he's been able to bring a product to market.
Yeah, I think it's really cool to see a first product from them.
I like this idea that you described of having a product like this where it's really just about, like, this is unique to people who want to support this channel. And so, like, you know, you actually get a functional blaster out of the way that you do that support rather than just, Kickstarter perks or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really, really cool idea. And for a first product, you know, like people are saying it's like, oh, it's just a Strife with side panels. And I mean, like, yes, but it's a uniquely designed one, and it's a first product from his shop, and it seems solid. I think that's awesome. Where's my, I keep losing my outline. Because I'm a professional podcaster.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of cool curves, the coat hanger here. Okay, so the coat hanger popped up at the last second for the story, and this is right up my alley, man. So this is based on one of Hot Coin's sketches. So Hot Coin, for anyone not already familiar, is an artist in the hobby who does a lot of concept drawings of blasters, and sometimes people see those concept arting drawings and are inspired to do integrations that come close to what they might have looked like, or sometimes they're like based on specific things. This is a case where Hotcoin did this sketch and Tinkershot was like, oh, I could model that. And turned it into an actual blaster that you can print. And this is such a cool thing that only 3D printing can really do, unless you're actually going to create things to the scale that injection molding requires. I really want one of these just because, like, it is, you know, it is essentially a primary class Springer, just like 75% of the blasters that come across the news desk are these days, but it just has such a unique, quirky look.
I'm in love with the way it looks.
Really adore it.
I am just in love with the shape of this thing. It's so pretty. I was kind of like my dilemma with if I was to make a primary class pump action Springer in the hobby was, it's like, well, the Talon Claw T4, the sear, pinches my hand because it's just the right size where the sear is exactly where my hand rests, and so I can't use that one. The SBL looks like an AR-15, kind of, so that one's a little less unsafe. And the pump skewer is a bitch to maintain, from what I understand, in the sense of, since it's made out of like three really long threaded rods, if you want to swap the spring, it takes forever to do that. And I'm like, this one is just like right up my alley. It's fun. It's shaped nice as a novel catch mechanism.
Yeah.
It has three different FPS ranges. It's just like, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I'm kind of tempted by it, honestly. My wallet keeps looking askance at me. But Tinkershot has a perfectly reasonable sort of like long waiting time thing going on right now. Considering that it's just one person building blasters, but
Tinkershot also has. I will say, if you don't know how Tinkershot actually does modeling, it is really impressive because he actually does all of it on a, if I remember correctly, on a tablet, like actually using a tablet screen to do it. If I remember correctly, I think it's because of some limitations just due to from like an injury or something that he had.
Interesting.
But
so
yeah,
they use a drawing tablet for all this?
It's like an actual either it's a tablet like an iPad, or it's like a Chromebook or something like that. Like it is
that's don't really the impressive.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I don't remember the modeling program.
Touchscreen supremacy.
Yeah, I don't remember the reason what it is, but Tinkershot actually had some little videos of showing how he does like a lot of that one time, and I saw it. It was really impressive, and I am
wild.
I'm just impressed by how Tinkershot does it, because Tinkershot's also talked about it on San Diego Nerf. But the reason why is just it's impressive just to know how you know Tinkershot wants to like how they model it. It is so impressive just to see how they model stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
It's
that's cool.
Because you don't think of it. It's almost like actually, if you remember, unfortunately they just vanished off the face of the planet, but Foam Knight.
Oh yeah. Foam
using,
Knight.
Yeah. Using Blender. And it's one of those things where
Foam Knight's projects were also collaborative with Hotcoin from my knowledge. And then I know Silly Butts also tried making one of Hotcoin's designs. They had like a break action cylinder fed flywheeler that they wanted made, and Silly Butts tried that, but I believe that project was shelved. So this isn't the first time a hobbyist has tried to bring to market one of Hotcoin's drawings as an actual design, and I think that's really cool.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
I just love it as a CAD designer myself, seeing people use kind of different methods in how they do their CAD.
Yeah.
I really like Tinkershot stuff because I'm a huge fan of the bolt action Ranger, you know, and I like the other stuff that he's done, some of the grip work for the Saturn and things like that as well. So just a really interesting design.
You're not making me want one less. I can tell you that much. Okay. Moving forward, to event related news. This one caught me by surprise yesterday when it suddenly popped up on Facebook, but Dart Zone is hosting an event in, very soon, in early June. So we got like a month and like a week or two to go, and called the Dart Zone Blaster Bash, and it's being held in Colorado in a stadium, so kind of similar to the Epic Blaster Battle events, except hosted by a major company. And the thing that's weird to me about this, it's not weird to me that a company would do this. I feel like it was inevitable. You know, Nerf used to financially back the Epic Blaster Battle events. This is now just a company that has decided to break out and do it on its own. The thing that is weird to me about it is the announcement feels very unprepared. They have a very highly produced announcement video that came out that has the mascot of the... They say that it's in... What's the team called? It's in partnership, quote-unquote, with the team that owns the stadium. It's a soccer team. And I forget what the team is called because I don't follow sports. But they have this video, and they put it on Facebook, and today it appeared on YouTube as well. And they're selling tickets, but it's unclear what you're getting when you pay for a ticket. When you go to the ticket purchasing website, there's a bunch of half-hour time slots, and each one is its own $20 ticket. And then there's another one at the bottom that says HVZ, and you pay $50.
Yeah, they're actually debating that right now in the Foam Blast Discord even, like, what the money gets you. It's like...
What does that mean?
Like, what does it mean?
You can only pick one of those options, so it looks like you're either...
Are they just going to be, like, carting you into the stadium for, like, a time slot, and then it's like, all right, your time's done, get out.
I can't imagine that's what it is. And it just feels sloppy, which is kind of weird. Mind you, the event sounds fine. It sounds cool. You know, it's a big space. Jolt cried out in pain.
HVZ is supposed to be free.
Okay, we haven't gotten to the HVZ part of this conversation yet. We're not there. We're not there. What were you saying, Grim?
What I was going to say was the thing that actually caught me off guard and actually the thing that kind of made me pause for a second to do a double take was when I was reading through the announcement, when I saw it was in collaboration with Dart Wars. And the reason that's interesting is Dart Wars is a company that in around 2019, after a tournament that they had put on that was sponsored by a bunch of people, it ended up costing more than they expected. And they started committing tax evasion and they were forcibly shut down all across the United States. They had one local to me, and it was really good. There hadn't been a really good Nerf arena that was quite like it since, but they were all shut down for tax evasion.
Oh, I did not realize
I spent a lot of time at one of their competitors in recent years because it's one of the only things left in town because they don't have stuff. There hasn't been anything like Dart Wars ever since, really, because it was a very special kind of experience if you had ever been there. So it's weird to see that name return, and from what it looks like, they have the same style as the old company, so I'm wondering if someone bought the rights to the name or something, and then
rebooted it,
because they were forcibly shut down, and they had, like, thousands in tax evasion that I remember.
Wild. Okay, well, that's interesting perspective on this situation that I did not expect.
Yeah, so that's why I did a double take. I'm like, wait a minute, they're shut down. They were based in Colorado, to my knowledge, so it lines up and whatnot, or at least the main location was based in Colorado.
So so they have a bunch of different game types listed for this event. No real details on what the schedule would be like. I wouldn't expect them to have all that stuff decided at this point anyway. But there has been a lot of discussion about the fact that one of the game types, which is listed as a premium game type that seems to have an upcharge in order to participate in it, is, quote, human versus zombie. Now, having just been at Maryland Mayhem, which we'll talk about in a bit, and, you know, Dart Zone had representation there, and they gave out stuff during a raffle, which is awesome. I know that they go to and appear at events that have HVZs in the way that we traditionally do them in the Nerf hobby. The Humans vs. Zombies game exists under a Creative Commons license, which means that you can modify it and you can use it whenever you want, but you're not allowed to charge for it. The question is, because there's so little clarity in this, people are reasonably assuming that this is a version of the Humans versus Zombies game being done at this event and being upcharged for.
A pretty insane upcharge.
What do y'all think?
You get 4 hours for $50.
We don't know if it costs $30 extra or $50 extra because the ticketing doesn't make any sense. Like, do you pay $20 to get into the event, and then if you want to play HVZ, you pay an additional $50? Or do you just pay the $50 to get into the full version of the event, including the HVZ? I don't know. It is wild that that upcharge is more than the original ticket price, assuming you don't pay for time slots. If you do pay for time slots, the event might cost, I don't know, are you paying $20 for a half an hour? It's just so unclear. I really don't know at this point what anything actually costs. But I don't know. What do y'all think about this HVZ situation?
Deplorable.
Like, do you think that's what it is? Could it be something else?
I don't see this being anything other than HVZ. This is even it being non-plural. I think they've noticed the trademark on the name, and that's why they're doing that.
Mm.
And honestly, I hate every part of this.
Part of me, like, I don't like the HVZ side of it in the sense of that it really looks like they're trying to get around a trademark and whatnot for a hobby sport. But on the other hand, I want to see more companies putting out events for the hobby and whatnot. And so that's exciting on that front.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't describe... I've been thinking a lot about how we use the term hobby, you know, because the way we describe it in our show now is hobby is specifically stuff for hobbyists, like people who are deep into the modification of and the gamification of equipment and high power stuff. And in that sense, I don't think that this is an event for the hobby. I do think that it is an event if it exists as promised, and especially if there's some kind of answer for what's going on with the HVZ thing, you could certainly go to and have a good time at. I am confident that they are going to either provide all the equipment or only allow unmodified blasters from their company at the event.
I kind of got the feeling that, like, if Jared's Epic Nerf Battle is like the casual nerfers game, and Maryland Mayhem is the hobbyist game, this is somewhere in between, sort of like a middle ground, almost like a gateway event, if you will.
Yeah. I was talking with Beret about, because we were discussing at Mayhem why they didn't bring a Mark IV for people to check out. And, you know, I pointed out that when they brought the 1.2, and I think it was the 1.2 and the 2.1 to an event, they got really picked apart. It was one of the Dart Zone Pro Tour events, and they essentially brought their new products and put them in front of hobbyists, and hobbyists immediately had criticisms. And at least one, Sillybutts or somebody, found like a flaw in the 1.2 and showed them how you could like rip a part out to fix it. And I think that they don't want to.
No, this was actually at this. There was actually, like, a, what do you call it? Like, a meetup that they did directly before the Foam Pro Tournament. It was, like, before Endwar proper even started.
That's right.
At, like, a bowling alley where they had drinks and they had food and whatnot. Sillybutts basically looked at it, figured out there was a problem, then showed, hey, this is what you need to do to fix it. The interesting part about that was actually they were supposed to call Sillybutts up to bring him out to the Foam Pro Tournament before the Foam Pro Tour proper started to fix all the 1.2s, but then they never followed through with it, which was weird.
Yeah. Well, so I think that they don't want to repeat that experience of making things available before release. You know, they did this big giveaway and they did not give away a Mark IV. They didn't have it available for people to play with, and I think that they don't want to expose themselves to that kind of even constructive criticism from a knowledgeable audience base. I think they're realizing that they may have gotten more than they bargained for when they dug in on trying at least to cater to the hobbyists, the like hardcore hobbyists and the harder players.
With the 1.2 is people at the Dart Zone Pro Tournament figured out it was shit before they were even available to purchase, ruining any chance of that blaster from ever selling with hobbyists.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of like they, similarly to how I was describing Jared's Epic Nerf Battle Maryland and the Dart Zone event, Dart Zone is realizing that their market is more somewhere of the in-between, the casual, the like person who wants higher performance and wants to plank or like take it to events, but isn't a hardcore nerfer, because the expectations a hardcore nerfer has is out of the stratosphere as to what they reasonably want to bring to market. And
well, and
they've
missed a lot of opportunities with this too. Cause, I remember at Foam Pro Tour or Foam Pro Tournament, they would not allow, or Dart Zone Pro Tour Tournament, they would not allow people to even like remove optics and stuff off the blaster. And it's like, if you're trying to market your thing as the choice of pros, you need to let them, like, fans love watching, like, oh, how do they mess with this product to make it do what they want it to do? Like, fans absolutely love that stuff, but they forced everybody to keep them in full stock format with all of the attachments on them in the normal place. There's a specifically a thing where a player wanted was told that they had to keep the scope. They immediately took the scope off of the Mark III, and they were told they had to keep the scope on. And so they eventually were like, oh, I can put the scope on the underside of the barrel to get it out of my way. And they were like, no, you have to put the scope on top of the blaster during your actual competition.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are you trying to present yourself as the choice of the pros if you're not allowing those people to do what they need to do with your product to use it? This is a learning opportunity for you, and it's also better advertising to show your product in the hands of people using them competently in the way that they want to. Anyway, it doesn't make any sense to me, but I think that this event, I think you're right that this event is kind of an in-between place where it may lean a little bit more harder playing than something like Jared's Epic Nerf Battle, but it also is not going to be as intensive or as it doesn't have the same culture as an event like End War or Maryland Mayhem
or RAG, these things that,
or RAG, these things that really are community run and have a very different culture to them. That said, I would really like to see these questions sorted out. I do like the idea of events existing that are run by large companies. I think that the HVZ question is a very big question that they need to answer soon. But generally speaking, if they're going to put on a show, I think that's good. Finally, this last weekend was Maryland Mayhem, and I was lucky enough to get to attend with one of my kids. We had a really great time and were extremely exhausted after 8 hours of driving each way.
Oof.
Yeah. But
it was that far from you.
It was. It was totally worth it, though. It was absolutely worth it. We managed to at least partially attend every day. We were there for the last couple hours of the tournament on day one. We were there for the entire HVZ. We stepped away midday for lunch and a little bit of a rest and came back for the ending part. We had already been turned into zombies before we left. and then the third day, 11th hour, was really, really great. A lot of good variety of game types. There was a raffle, like I mentioned earlier. Dart Zone was giving away stuff. Some people in the hobby were giving away stuff.
How many people did you actually meet, like other creators? Because I saw a lot of photos between not just you, but other people as well. So
I got to meet Maryland Mayhem.
You met Maryland Mayhem. Congratulations. Yeah.
I got to meet Maritime Foam. So for the first two people I met were both of our podcast guests, right? I got to meet Taffy, finally, and Maritime Foam. I had the opportunity to meet Luke from Out of Darts. I very briefly met Captain Xavier. I got really good video of him explaining Titan Ball, but I didn't really get to chat with him much. But his, I'm blanking on his name, but I'm not blanking on his name because I should call him by his character name anyway. Sergeant Deplorable was there. Super nice and great to hang out with. Perry from Out of Darts was there as well. And actually, videotaped one of my daily songs. The Foam is More Fun for Everyone song,
which Murray refused to sing.
Cinematography by, Perry, from Out of Darts. But Boomstick, danced in it, which was great.
That's awesome. That sounds like something you would do.
Absolutely. Yep. It was awesome.
And I mean, I should include Boomstick in this. I've met Boomstick before, though. Boomstick was at a Foamdemic war a while back. Foamdemic was there. Al the Geek was there. Who am I forgetting? Silver Fox, I got to meet Ryan. I actually bought them out of all of their Galahorn shells.
I love that.
And then at 11th hour, Beret used my Gjallarhorn in one round, and I used the Gjallarhorn in another round. So
that's funny.
That was a super fun time. Yeah, got to meet a lot. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody, but got to meet a lot of other creators, which is really, really exciting. It was a good sort of like culture. It was a good culture. Everybody's very open, now, very chatty, willing to hang out.
What did you run for the entire event? What
What did I run? Okay, so I didn't play competitive, so I didn't run anything on day one. But at the HVZ, I started, you know, there's a limit at the beginning where you can only have a six-round Springer. I started with a Tech 6 with your cylinder in it, Joel.
How'd that work out?
And better than I expected. I'm fairly confident I hit a couple zombies with it. So what I was running at the very beginning was I have the Tech 6, I have a holster for it, and then I have the Saturn with the Chenier lever action kit in a sling on my back.
Mm.
And I got very good at putting it in and out of the sling because it's a really good setup for being able to work on objectives. So I can sling that, and if I have to run, I don't lose my blaster or I'm not trying to carry it, and I can get it out very quickly to use it. So I ran the Tech 6 until we unlocked higher ammo capacities, and then I started using it as a backup to the Saturn. We eventually had a break, and I switched to a Villainator just because I wanted something really, really simple, and I did not make it as a human until we unlocked electric blasters. But I didn't. I made a point this trip of not wanting to bring like lipos. I'm traveling with a kid. I'm dealing with all this stuff. I didn't want to bring lipos, and I didn't want to bring like a bazillion magazines.
Yeah, another.
So we tried to keep things relatively simple.
Another level of complexity there you don't want.
Yeah. Although we had considered taking our Percys, and I actually wish that I had. Mm. I wish we had taken the Percys for sure.
Yeah.
My kid ran, started HVZ with a Sweet Revenge with an ammo holder on top. And that actually worked really well for them, but then got turned before we had an opportunity to upgrade. Then at on the last day, at 11th hour, what did I run? I was just kind of running different random stuff all the time. I was constantly changing. I ran the Saturn some more. My kid had... Oh, we got my kid's skewer signed by Taffy.
Hey!
My kid is still, as far as I know, the youngest person to ever build a skewer. So Taffy's really, really excited about that and was happy to sign it. And we both ran that some at 11th hour. I also used the Tech 6 some more. And then, like I said, I ran the Gjallarhorn in a game of Civil War. What else did I run? My kid borrowed a Nemesis from somebody for a while. I don't know. At an event like that, it's kind of like I want to just be grabbing random stuff and like just trying things out. Dart Zone was there with a lot, like pretty much their entire blaster line sort of available to just grab and use whenever you want. And I kind of wanted to grab some stuff that I hadn't played with yet, but just didn't really get around to it. You know, I'm also dealing with like, this is one of the things about doing these trips with kids is just like, I'm also dealing with making sure we both have sunscreen all the time, making sure that my kid is staying hydrated and fed and
what KT being a dad.
Gear.
Oh,
I know. Right. What the heck? It was
terrible.
What? Yeah, I know. You know, sometimes you just gotta
do that. Yeah, you gotta roll with it.
Yeah. So it was, there's a lot of extra complications, which is why I don't want to deal with like lipos, mm-hmm. but honestly, next time I probably will.
Well, the Percy's has its own battery, which is, you know, you could just run that. Yes. You don't need the lipo.
That's part of why I consider doing, and I have two Percy's, so I could take both batteries.
True.
If I'm concerned
very
about
true.
Running out. And I have the extended, that Outer Darts extended hopper, which is quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's more or less what I ran. I actually ran the Tech 6 a lot more than I expected to.
This makes me happier than you'll ever know.
Well, when we were playing Titan Ball, I don't generally want it. Like, I'm usually more of an objective runner. And so I don't want to carry a large blaster that I'm going to have to fret about and fiddle around with and like worry about where I'm putting it. And the Tech 6 is just great because it was fun and ridiculous, and also I can holster it. But it, you know, it shoots, the Tech 6 is shooting like stock Nerf numbers, but I don't know, it's got a little pop. Like the range is pretty good on it. I definitely was able to take down at least one like full auto person that definitely thought they thought had me pinned down with my little Tech 6. Yeah, it was a really good. It was a really good time. It was a really good time.
Glad the Tech 6 was getting some love.
Oh, absolutely! It'll get more too. I got to make videos about it, I think.
Ooh, great! Now you've got Jolt wanting me to print that out and put it in a Tech 6 because that's one thing Jolt's been trying to get me to do for a while now.
You were supposed to
beta test it.
Look, then you can get something. You can get something over 12% really quickly.
That's true. Very true.
What is the other thing? You know, game types on the 11th hour, game types, they did... we ended with a round of Civil War, which is where I used the Galahorn, and I got some pretty wild footage of me attempting, because I... You know, are you familiar with that game type? Two groups stand in a line facing each other. And you, each side, one at a time, gets a single shot volley at the other side.
Oh, yeah. I remember Spam talked about that at some point, because they did something similar down the SCNC.
It's incredibly fun. If you get hit in a limb, you lose the use of that limb. If you get hit in the core of your body, you're dead. And so I wound up with just one arm. But so I was figuring out how to load the Galahorn with one arm, and I still managed to tag two people with one arm Galahorn firing.
Alakablamo is the thing that comes
before,
to mind.
Before my own kid hit me and took me out. I'm pretty sure I was the last person standing, actually, quote unquote standing. I was literally like rolling over the Galahorn to reach ammo to reload the shells.
Amazing.
It was something special. We played Titan Ball. We played, I forget what they call it, but the like territory style game where there's multiple different points you have to control. And they have those nice buckets that have the big red and blue buttons on top of them.
But King of
that,
the Hill?
That will do all the timer counting. They use them for King of the Hill, but they also use them for other, they're programmable. So they can use them for these control point things. They can use them for King of the Hill. They also use them for, you know, actually the first round that we played was an infinite respawns, like it's played like just a straight up elimination game, but you have infinite respawns, and every time you go back, you hit the button, so with your color on it, and it just counts your deaths. And so you wind up with a score at the end of like 120, where people just keep going back and respawning. So, those things are amazing. Those are so nice. And it made a lot of the game types just flow really, really well. I appreciated that a lot. What else happened on this trip? Oh, there was thunderstorms on the HVZ day.
How lovely.
They had to do a couple thunder holds, but the team handled it super, super well. And there were a couple injuries. I don't know how that worked out, but the team immediately leapt to deal with it. I didn't see any hesitation or anything. Like, they were ready to have that problem, although everybody, of course, wants to avoid it. But largely speaking, the day seemed to go, from my perspective, smoothly. I know that I could tell that some of the admin folks were, like, stressed out, but, like, who wouldn't be? Right? Like, they had twice the number of people there that they've ever had at one of their events before. So, of course, you'd be stressed out.
Yeah.
So, anyway, long story short, we had a great time. I think it's a killer event. I really hope that they do it more. I really hope that they continue to all work together to do this at least once a year, because it was very, very much worth the travel. I know a lot of people traveled a lot farther than I did, not by car, as far as I know. but because, you know, there were a lot of West Coast, decent number of West Coast people there. I thought that it was really, really fabulous. Maybe some of y'all can make it there.
I hope
one of these times,
one of the
PNNN caster meetup.
Yeah.
Yes. We got to record the podcast. We got to do it at the event.
At the event.
What event? Infinity what event guests. Is actually
We should totally like try and record the news one week at Maryland Mayhem or whatever.
I mean, yeah, or some event. What event would actually be more equidistant to us?
PASF, I don't know.
Probably, well, actually, no. I don't know.
We're on all maybe like four sides of this.
I'm in the middle. I'm in the middle of the United States, so like anywhere goes for
me.
I'm
in freaking Michigan.
Maybe the place we need to go is the Dart Zone Blaster Bash. It's right in Colorado.
No.
It's right in the middle.
No.
we can pay a total of $100. We got to start our Patreon, which can pay for the $100 to get all four of us into the HVZ, and we'll record the podcast during the HVZ.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
Yeah, we're like dodging zombies and recording the podcast with our thoughts. I have
and
to
with
bring
leaks
back
in the news this day as you're running. Is
yeah. I have to bring back my really bad lavalier mic or whatever that has terrible audio.
I have a lav mic too. I have one I could just have on my purse.
I'll just be talking to my phone.
Yeah,
well, because I have to, that's what I use. It plugs into my phone, so I'd be like speaking into a phone and using a blaster in one hand. It's like,
oh my God.
And we'd have to group up so we can actually talk to each other and whatnot, or we could like Discord call with like wireless earbuds or something like that.
Oh, perfect.
Oh, beautiful.
We need two devices beautiful. Then to record everything.
Oh, yeah, I think yeah. That's true.
I think we sorted it out. I think we figured out what the next step is for PNNN. live
PNNN
on the scene
on the road.
Recording. Yeah. Okay, well, with that, I think we're good here. I have to go finish editing the episode and like run a Pokemon tournament and stuff.
And you got to stream.
Stream tonight. That's right. I'm streaming
tonight.
You're
such a busy person.
By the time you hear this, I will be, if you hear this on Saturday, I will be streaming again on Sunday. I'm still writing a song a day this month. I have about a week and a few days left. So come say hey, Kinetic Turtle on Twitch. How about the rest of y'all? What you got going on, Vile?
Fridays and Saturdays on Twitch as well at Vile_mods. I'll be there tomorrow. Well, actually, wait. No, I won't. We've got construction coming.
I was going to say, well,
tomorrow
also,
is not happy, but.
Well, also, this will come out the day after.
True,
tomorrow,
true.
So.
This will literally come out a day
but,
after.
But
you're not
if you're listening to this on Saturday,
yes,
tonight.
It would be the
tonight,
same day that you
Vile
are hearing this.
Tonight.
Yeah. So I will be there because I
not,
always do it.
Next Friday and Saturday.
Exactly.
Yep.
So come say hi.
Joel, what you got going on?
Doing work.
Other than this,
eating hot glue. That's it. I just
fabulous.
Really wanted to say eating hot glue because it's my thing.
And Grim, what's going on?
I got a whole lot of nothing to do, I guess. I don't know. I don't do much other than the news.
Yeah. Well, you can, of course, check out both of their YouTube channels, which are, as always, linked down in the description. And with that, I'm off. I actually have to go pick up my kids. So bye.
Bye.
Have a great podcast. Yay, we casted a pod. Good night, everybody. But good night. It's like 2 o'clock. 3 o'clock. All right. Gotta go. Bye.
All right.
Everyone can hit stop. Everyone can hit stop.